Hát ha blízkaj. I never know exactly what I'm supposed to be talking about, but I just got this second paper with four issues that I'm supposed to discuss, and I guess we're not going to learn straight from Simon Cafe with a sefer, but to discuss these issues, I think, you know, it'll just take a couple of minutes and we'll figure out something else. Kashering with steam. Now, see, when you kasher with steam, Rabbi said, it's a very a tricky thing. There could be steam that's cold. Now, when the water condenses, it's actually, what is steam? Steam means that there was water vapor, which means that you can't see it. It's completely evaporated. And it condenses, which means it comes back from a gas state to a liquid state, and it becomes a liquid again. And at that time, it loses an enormous amount of heat. And when it's water, or even while it's visible, it's water. Otherwise, it wouldn't be visible. And the steam, on the other hand, can be very hot, depending on the circumstances. We'll discuss that in a second, but Moshe was very much against kashering with steam, because he said, we have nobody ever kashered with steam, and the Sforum don't talk about it, so it would be a new method. But on the other hand, Moshe said that we could start being makil by things where the blia was only with steam. For instance, in a microwave oven. So you put the thing into the oven and it starts cooking. The oven has no heating mechanism which could keep the oven hot. The oven is cold. So the food though begins to give out steam as it heats. You know, even most use the microwave to take something that's already cooked and heat it up, or take a glass of water or milk or something and heat it up, which takes a minute. Goyim have the use of more than years. I don't know why it's this division, but that's the way it seems. They have these books about microwave cooking, and they can take a piece of meat and keep it in there for an hour, because according to these are the directions. But whatever you're doing, steam comes out of the food. It's if it's there for a minute, so there's no hot steam. There's only cold steam. But if you're there for, if you keep it there for a while, 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, so then the steam is hot, the walls are hot, and so there's a shiloh of a bliya, but the bliya is only through steam. So Moshe Zatzal said, if the bliya is nothing but steam, it's kabbalah kach boil time. Then you could fill up a bowl of water, close the microwave, and you know, put it on high and keep it closed, of course, and keep it there for 15-20 minutes, and then the thing will fill up with steam. So even though there's a, you know, there's an exhaust, and the steam goes out, but sof kol sof, the production of steam is faster than the exhaust. It just keeps filling up to a point where the steam is sort of you know, even circulating. Right. But that's what he said. But that's only the walls and the top of the microwave. Mashen came the keli that you put the food in, or the bottom with the spillovers very often. So there's real irui. You know, and it's more than just eerie, because the microwave pretty much only makes water cook. I mean, there are other things too, but water is 99% of the microwave's activity. So it cooks the water inside the potato or everything. You put a bowl of sugar in the microwave oven and keep it there for 3 weeks, the thing will be ice cold. Nothing will change because there's no water there to cook up. The thing is, the steam of water is circulating there, but when it boils over, which happens often, you know, it could boil over the top, over the kli, and run down the sides and fall to the floor. That's irui, but it's more than irui because the keli keeps on cooking. So the stuff in the bottom literally boils and cooks. And if it has water, it will just go when it's lying on the floor there and cook till it evaporates completely.
Actually, yeah. It's 15, 20 minutes. Once it is boiling, a minute or two, 3 minutes. It's not going to boil anymore in 20 minutes.
It's different than we have boiling in a pot when you magil. Because if you keep it there for a few seconds, so you did the maximum. Because the boiling doesn't increase the extraction, the haflota, any more than in the original couple of seconds. But over here, we don't know how it works. It may work slowly because it's just steam that's floating around it. So if we don't know, so we do it a little bit more. We just have to keep it there for a longer time. And again, like I told you, it takes 5 to 10 minutes before there is any heat hitting the walls. You know, everybody will tell you, open up the microwave, look at that, tiloiploim, the walls are cold, right? That's what everybody did when the microwave started coming out. That's what they pointed to, right? Look at this interesting thing. But that's only after 5 minutes. After 10, 15 minutes, the chamber is filled with heat. And maybe the walls become hot. That's a natural thing. They don't become hot from the microwave. The oven doesn't do anything. Because it has to, you know, make these molecules tremble and cause heat. But it's not molecules of steel that tremble. It pretty much is molecules of water. I mean, there are other substances that respond to the short waves, the microwave. But it's almost always water. And Memela, the way to cash it is with steam. But on the floor, you can't cash it with steam. You have to have at least Iru Kliyishin, the minimum. Why? Because the spillover is Iru. It's more than steam. So therefore, we use Iru. Not Choshish so much for the boiling later, but it's the spillover that we're Choshish for, which happens all the time. And so you have to kash it with irui. It's irui is pouring hot water on it, on the surface. And if the tarfus, or the problem food, the milchik, the fleshik, poured onto the floor with irui, so we have to at least pour boiling water and straight onto the floor.
Would this all work for Pesach? What Pesach is a whole different story?
It would work for Pesach, but it's better not to. I'll tell you why. Let me tell you why. Every microwave, like we said before, has an exhaust, and you don't clean that, right? You don't take off the screen over there and the filter and get behind everything and clean, and it's a mess. And if you really don't know what you're doing, you might just ruin the things that you take out. So by Pesach, the mashahu is a problem. And the rest of the year, so there's a mashu, so it's vasis. Cash of the whole thing in fine and
what? Does it make a difference what the walls are made out?
They're mostly made of plastic in the smaller microwaves.
Can you cash it plastic?
You could cash a plastic. In the earlier tshuva, Moshe questions whether you could cash a plastic. But later, in a later tshuva, Moshe says he went through the union, he studied it very carefully, and he doesn't see why there should be any difference between plastic and something else. He thought in the beginning that there's some factor that exists in plastic that prevents it from giving up the bleed that it has. You know, like the Torah says Eidus on the klicheres, that it doesn't go out of its dirtiness, out of its foul condition when it absorbed bleed. Right, so Eino Yosef Eter Doifi Eino Yosef. It still is in a Doifi state, like the Baranu Doifi. And you can't get it all completely out. Once it's in there, it's in there. So, but the plastic, if it's not klicheres, let's assume it's any other material. You know, there came up a shaila in the time of the Rosh and the Bahag, whether you could kash a stone, Caleb. It doesn't say anywhere in Chazal about kashing stone. So the Bahag says, it doesn't say in Chazal about kashing stone. The Rosh disagreed with him, and the halach is like the Rosh. All the later poiskim agreed with the Rosh. The Rosh said, after all, Chazal say ha'toyre he'idu al klicheres chen yoyt mitar doshe. But the Torah never said Eidus on a stone keli. That is any yoyt mitar doshe. So we treat a stone keli like any other keli. In plastic, Reb Moshe, in the beginning, don't forget, plastic kelim are quite a recent innovation. I mean, I don't know if it's anyone my age over here, but when I was a kid, there were no plastic. It didn't exist. Radio cases were plastic. They called it Bakelite. It was that was about the only thing. And they started developing soft plastic, and so plastic bags and other things. And naturally, it took a while for them, you know, to get the technology. At first, the plastic stuck with each other. You bought 10 plastic bags or something, sandwich bags, and you have to pull them apart. It took a half an hour. So, you know, little by little, they developed the technology and the know-how to make the kelim properly. And then today, we have, you know, all these problems are solved. But initially, there were no plastic kelim. So Moshe Zatzal was mesupik, and he had two sfeikas. One sfeik was where the plastic maybe have some special quality to it, which makes it like klicheres. We, even though we don't have the Torah heida, but on the other hand, we don't have a Torah lo heida. Understand? We can't say like by stone. Stone existed in the time of the Torah, and the Torah never said eidus that stone can't be poilet. So we assume stone could be poilet. So you need this to say that stone can't be poilet, but plastic didn't exist in the time of the Matan Torah and the, you know, centuries afterwards. So we don't have the Torah was made that it's absorbed, that it can't give out its bliya. On the other hand, the Torah, you can't say the Torah was not made on it. So, understand, maybe if it would have been around at that time, the Torah would have been made. That's what the Moshe declared. There was another suffix he had by plastic. The other suffix was, Chazal say that if you have a keli, that you're worried about it, that it might get spoiled during the kashering. So then even if you put it into a perfect kashering, it's no good. And the Gemara gives an example. A dish made of cheres, right? Our dishes are made of vitriolized cheres, which is porcelain. But in those days, they would make a dish of the kind of cheres that the flower pot is made of, you know. A pretty porous cheres, which just it's the clay, you know, baked in an oven. So the Gemara says that if you take a dish, cheres, there is a way to kasher cheres, by the way. Very simple way to kasher cheres. Through liblin. So, and you put it in liban, and why can't you put it in the kiln of the potter? That's a very high temperature, and it makes liban. So why can't you kasher it there?
Want to be destroyed?
Oh, so the Gemara says even if you'll get it out before it's destroyed, but you're nervous about it becoming destroyed. Chos olav dilma poka. So you'll put it in there for a few seconds, and say, no, it's enough. You'll be very nervous about leaving it there, right? So any keli that you're nervous about leaving it in the medium of kashering, you can't kasher. That's what the Gemara says. Chayas olav dilma poka. So we're afraid you wouldn't kasher it properly. No, you'll go through the motions. You'll hold it there for a few seconds, a second or two, and you're out quick, right? You know, you leave it another 2 seconds, you know what happened last time. It busted right away, you could hear the crack. So what do you do? So that's why we can't kasher dishes of cheres, because it's always Hatayra Chosalov. You know good and well if you put them into what are those ovens? Self-cleaning oven during the self-cleaning process. The dishes will crack all over the place. So you're still Chaya Solov, so you can't put it with Libun. But on the other hand, there are special kelim made of cheres, which are designed to withstand the heat. Right? An oven has a different kind of cheres, possibly. I'm not familiar with the technology, but this cheres doesn't crack in the oven. It's made to withstand the oven. In Chazal themselves, speak about a baking tablet. Which they used to do all the time, like we have, take something and pour it out onto a grill, a pancake or a scrambled egg. So in those days they would take, highest olive, yeah. At least most of the stuff was drunk already. Good. Okay, let's not waste the time. We'll keep on. I'll keep on rubbing it. So it's okay. Good. So Chazal speak about that, about a tablet, because they used to do that all the time. They would cook. In fact, they would heat it in the. They would heat it in the fire. They would put it on coals. These tablets. Well, they used to use it for the roof. You know, what do you call what? Huh? Shingles, right? They would use it as a shingle for the roof. Like we have all the old roofs. You go down the park, you still see plenty of them. You have the shingles that are made of clay, of baked clay tiles. Yeah. Right. So those are the Spanish design, correct? But they used to use the flat tiles like that for baking. They would put it on coals, then they would take it off and pour on, a pancake. It was burning hot, and the pancake would bake right then and there on the spot. We'll pour in a scrambled egg. Tigmar mentions these things, by the way. The pancake is called Trisa. And so the Gemara says, of course you could kasher it with coals because you're not worried about it. It's made to withstand coals. It's a heavy cheres that's not fragile like a dish, and it's strong. So those you could kasher with libun. The Gemara only says you got to be careful because where is the fire? On the cheres, on the bottom of it. That's how you do the cooking. And where is the when you're going to kasher it? And where is the stuff that the food that's cooked on the other side, on top of it? So you got to be careful to take it and turn it over so that the coals should hit the top. Okay, but the Moshe Zatzal held perhaps that plastic is like that, because plastic, you'll take an old plastic. In fact, today, just a simple jar, the kind that you come home from the store filled with pickles or something like that, which they have in all these food stores. Plastic that holds a half a pound, a pound, a few ounces. You put those things in boiling water, they'll immediately not melt, but they'll shrivel, they'll turn, they'll get curved and everything. So of course there's chaya solov. If you're going to kasher it in boiling water, you know what you'll do. You'll hold it there, put it in, pull it out, right? You'll say a birchas hagoimel that it didn't ruin, you got it out quickly. So that's the real chayas olav dilma poka. So Moshe Zatzal said that, of course, that kind of thing, you can't kasher this, nothing to talk about. Or even a better, stronger plastic. The last is Saif Yomov. He wrote another tshuva that he said, he spent a lot of time, he looked at it, studied it, and he got opinions of people who are familiar with the science and the technology of it, and it came out that there's no factor in the plastic that should say HaToyer HaIdah. right? Like on Klicheris, which has these little pores going through it all over the place. On a regular soft cheris, we're talking about, but not on the porcelain, which doesn't have that. Oh, that's today's dishes. They have a glass coating. Yeah. So you bite it, it's the same thing. So you can kasher your glass, you could put into the oven just like cheris. If it's a glass, that'll resist the oven. But it won't resist the oven. The glass will crack too. You take a little a dish sometimes, right? And you look at, you find hairline cracks running all through it. Nice design, huh? And it runs, why? Because it was once in an oven. So, the mice is like this. So, in much hell, you can't kasher plastic for these two reasons. But later on, he said that he can't find any grounds for saying that it has any similarity to klicheres. And he says that on the other hand, you have to take one that's not chayas olav dilma poka. You have stronger plastics. I mean, there's all different kinds. You take your Tupperware, it'll just dump complete in a second. It'll bend out of shape, and that's the end of it if it goes into boiling water. It's a beautiful kind of thing. It's just perfect. It opens, it closes. It's a delight. But you got to be careful not to abuse it. No, Karel is no, Karel is ceramic glass. It is definitely a trade secret. You know, what's the formula for Karel? It's an extremely successful material, and the people in Corning, they're not interested in giving out. So I was once there, and I got into conversations with people, and I got out a little bit some of the general picture. There's about 88% glass, and the remaining 12% is from 10 to 10.5% ceramic, in other words, clay, and the rest is some other chemicals, and that's what it is. So there is ferrous there, and there is glass, but you know something, my boy, so let me tell you something. Could you kasher Cornell or Corel? Yeah. Okay, it's Corningware. They make it. They just call it Corel. So, could you kasher it? Tell you a little incident that happened a couple of weeks ago. A fellow comes over to me by chasna, and he says, "Could you kasher Corel? A Corel dish." So I said to him, "What's the difference? It has cheres, so maybe the cheres is nothing, maybe it's all glass." I said, "But glass you also shouldn't kasher." He says he knows. So immediately I got the picture. Let me tell you, if he knows, then he looked in the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah says that you're not supposed to kasher glass. The Yarmouth says you're not supposed to kasher glass. Ashkenazim don't kasher glass. But there are days that you could kasher glass, and therefore B'mokem Hefsid, you could kasher glass. What Hefsid is there? In one dish. It's shaykh to say Mokem Hefsid. But it is shaykh to say Mokem Hefsid. Because something happened in his house, whoever let something spill on the dish, either his wife or himself, you know, or one of the kids, and it created a whole incident. And because of the incident, he wants, there's the Hefsid. It's connected to something that took place. I got that immediately, so I called him over and I said, "Come, let's sit down for a minute." I told him, "I want to give you a bracha before anything else." I said, "And my bracha to you is that every single last one of your Karel dishes should be cracked and broken, because you should use it gesunte heit, and your children should use it, and your wife should use it, and every time there'll be something dropping and breaking, and you'll buy a new set, and after that breaks, you'll buy another set." So I said, "Now you could go home and you could say there's no hefsid merubah. There's no reason. Let's be machmir and let's throw out the dish, and that's the end of it. Because you'll have anyway, the other dishes are going to be broken." And I told him, there's a Gemara. The Gemara says in Yuma, "Revisa di yadukim, tviri mani." Interesting, beautiful Gemara. The Gemara says when you bring up a child, and so you know Chazal sort of packaged. They're delicious and most like important memoriam sometimes in a little package, and you got to open up the package to get it out. The Gemara says, Revisa the Yanuka, when you bring up a child. So if you have no mother's milk for him, you could make milk by taking cow's milk and mixing something into it, and then later you feed him eggs and so on. That's not what the Gemara says. After that, when he grows up still further, Revisa the Yanuka is Tviri Mani, is to break Kalim. Abaya had little children, and he went out and he got special kalim that they should break and crack all over the house. And because that's the visa of the Yanuka. What the Gemara wants to tell you in this package is that just like a kid needs a soft-boiled egg, and just like the kid needs special kind of formula for milk, so too the kid needs to have a life where he could break a dish and nobody's going to jump on him and be ready to crack his head open.
You should have a museum as you're living.
Yeah. So that was my answer to the guy for his shaila, and he got up and he told me, he says, Rebbe, what you told me now was the most important lesson that anybody ever told me. I got every word of it, and I'm going to go home and we're going to have a happy home from now on. Yeah. I mean, understand, that was what? Don't kasher the karel. If you live in a house where a single karel dish is a half sid merubah, that what's happened when the next one will break? Who broke it? Huh? And how did it break? For through some kind of neglect, huh? And they didn't. They should have done this and should have done that, and they could have done this and could have done that. Sure, right? Yeah. Okay, let's leave that issue alone. We're talking about kashering things. What? No, what made him change was that he discussed it for over 20 years with people, various people, those who knew, is there any porosity in our plastics? Right? Is the plastic more porous than the ordinary materials that we have, the wood and the metal, and if there is a certain absorption, is there any reason why we should say that that absorption is retained? So it got to the point where he finally, in Chatzila, the approach that he had was that we don't know what kind of material, and we don't have a Torah on it, and until we find out a basis for saying that it's like this one or like that one, so you got to be machmir. But later, after a long time, Moshe, who was extremely careful in everything that he checked through, it's unbelievable how careful he was. He made many experiments. Interesting, there are two tshuvas where Moshe says that when water begins to boil, one he says that's 165, and the other one he says it's 175 or something like that. And you know why? Because he experimented twice. Once it was out in the mountains, and once it was in the east side of New York, and of course at higher than sea level. Yeah, so the boiling point goes down. So it yielded different results. But he was very, very careful when he experimented. Reb Moshe was the Chochem Mikol Odom. Let me tell you, there are certain plastics that are so unbelievably strong. It's unbelievable. I mean, I saw plastic which, when they kashered with an acetylene torch, the acetylene torch could burn through steel if you have it there for more than 2 seconds. But the plastic, it didn't burn through, because that plastic was. There are many different plastics. They all look the same, you know. But
we discussed kashering with a double problem, like the big. Tureen, the big soup things in the hotel.
Hold on, we'll get to that in a minute. We got the next one here. Okay, kashering. So it's another. Let's get back to the steam with one final memo on the steam. That if there's kiboyle kachpoilta, if it got its bliya with steam, you could get it out with steam. But now listen to this. I would have left out a very important part. The Moshe Zatzal said you can kasher anything with steam. If you have such a heavy layer of steam that when it condenses and it forms droplets on the wall, those droplets begin to boil. Then he said,
right.
Then he said, there's nothing wrong with steam at all, because you're actually kashering with the droplets that are boiling. But be careful. Initially, when the droplets form, they're cold. Right? You could touch them. They're cold, not mamsh cold. They're like, you know, room temperature. But when you continue the steam, it just continues and continues, and then the condensed droplets on the wall, they're 212. They boil right away, because the application of new heat k'seder is enough to make them boil. So Moshe said, if that's the case, if you have such a heavy layer of steam, then you could use steam.
How long would you have to do that? How long would you have to do that?
Depends on the steam that you have. I mean, you have to take a look at what. Sometimes you use a steam jenny, and you could rent one of these from a company or buy them. It's not that expensive. And kasherers go around with them. And you have a steam jenny that you just. And it could be very, very strong and very, very hot. You know, so sometimes you just have some weak kind of steam. You know, it's a. Abyssal, and then it really can never cause droplets to become boiling, because it doesn't have the capacity for it. The heat source is very low.
What about the tap water sensor?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me tell you. I want to set your mind at rest when it comes to these things. When you pour from one keli into the other, the top keli is kosher and the bottom keli is treif. And you want to know if you have to say the top keli becomes treif from the bottom one. What treif? For food, not just the kli. Real tarfus in the bottom kli. And you're pouring hot water from the top kli. Right? Real hot water. Not just tam avivos hot water. From the hot water spout, from the dispenser, which is 180, 190 degrees, right? That's what it says on it, 190 degrees. What?
The steam goes back.
The steam goes back. I want to tell you something. There's one place in your day where this is mentioned. That's in Simen Kufay Sif Gimel. Okay. In the Ramah. In Simen Kufay and Sif Gimel, in the Ramah, he talks about pouring and where the steam comes up. But all of that, first of all, the Ramah at the end says, b'di'eved ein choshishim. Okay? That's only l'chatchila. And he says, b'di'eved ein choshishim. Oh, shkar. That's good. They tell a maisa from one of the Chassidish Rebbes who was like, outstanding for his understanding of people. He had once a tish. And they gave out soup. And there was a Yid who tripped a little, and he poured out the soup, and it went all over the Rebbe, over his Shaimel, over his Bekish, over everything. So he took a towel and wiped it off, and then he whispered to the Gabbai something. And what did he whisper to the Gabbai? So later it became apparent. He says that the Yid who spilled his soup all over me, he has to get another bowl of soup. So go make sure he gets another bowl. Okay.
Oh,
so you're right. You were talking about this spout. Yeah. That was enough of a diversion. Never come back to it. Right? That's the way it is. But the spout is like this, Rabbi said. But the evidence, okay. All right? That's what Taramor says. But let me tell you something. All this is built on the Mishnah in Machshirin. Because in the Yufi, it comes from a Mishnah Masechta Machshirin. Masechta Machshirin is talking about Hechshir L'Kavul Tumen, if the steam goes up and it becomes wet, and all things like that. The Mishnah says that the only time you choshish for steam going up is when there's a cold thing that pours into a very hot thing. And the heat in the bottom thing will rise with a sharpness, and it will hit the stuff on top. But never when a hot thing goes into a cold thing. Reb Shimon, and we don't pass him like Reb Shimon, says that it even is shash when the top thing was hot, but the bottom thing was still hotter. So that's a klal godel. The bottom thing has to be hotter than the top. And la halacha, the bottom thing has to be hot and the top thing cold. And if the bottom top is hot and the bottom is cold, so we don't say that we're choshish.
But in the middle, it's going to be both, they both can be hot. What, as you're pouring in, then the bottom is half full, but it's full with hot boiling water. The top is.
So what? So they're both hot.
They're both hot.
So the bottom is not hotter than the top, even like Jeb Shimon, it's nothing.
Forget about the steam. What about the connection of the hot water?
The spout.
The spout. Oh, you mean if you stick the spout into the kli?
The hot water flowing into the stream. The solid stream.
Oh, you mean it should go up the stream?
Right.
We're not choshish for that at all. The Taz says something like that, but no one else is choshish for it. And let me explain to you. We're not choshish that there's a stream pouring down and there's some particle that's flowing up the stream as it pours down. Right. Like the salmon do when they... We're not choshish for that. Yes, you could use a hot water dispenser for anything, even though the goyim, they use it for tarfus or whatever. It shouldn't touch the spout. And if you see that there are people who are such slavs, I'm sorry for the use of that word, but that's what it is, and that they actually take their kalim and push it up to the spout like the little kids do, so then you got to be very careful. So don't use the dispenser. But most adults are generally, you know, a little bit more clean and neat and dignified than that. They don't push their keli into the spout. You hold it a couple of inches below it, and you pour in three.
What?
Huh? Oh, in Pesach, the Mishnah Brura says that you got to be choshish that there's a connection between the two. Only Pesach, because Pesach was choshish for a mashahu. Maybe in the steam that goes up, there's a mashahu. So Hagam, we're not choshish for it, even when the top is cold and the bottom is hot. With the Eved, and surely not when the top is hot and the bottom is cold. The Apple became for Linyan Pesach, we're choshish from Mashu. And I don't think we may be choshish for the Eved. It's just, l'chatchila, not to do it, that's all. For Pesach, we say l'chatchila, don't do it on Pesach. That's all. Okay, let's go. Kashring by being poigem of Ben Yoimoy. Okay, this is an extremely important shaila, and those who are professional kashrus deal with this all the time. Right? The companies work 7 days a week or 24 hours a day. There's three shifts, and if there's two shifts, then they almost run into each other, and there's a little time for cleaning. They're busy cleaning, and the thing doesn't stop running, but they're clogged. And on weekends, well, you know, there is a break on weekends. But very often, some production has to be made during the week. And there's not going to be 24 hours of downtime, like you call it, in the industry. There's no 24 hours of downtime. Downtime means when the machines are not being used, when nothing is done. That's only on weekends. And there are no 24 hours of downtime. And you can't have all these workers and people, and they're waiting there. They're being paid for the hour. So they can't sit around and wait till you look at the clock and say it's 24 hours. The production has to go on. So you're given a chance to make a kosher production, special production, right? Kosher l'mahadrin. So what do? To kasher the equipment. How do you kasher the equipment? You can't kasher a ben yoimoy, right? Especially if you use hagola. The water will become treif from the kli, and it's like a treif of production was made anew, and you got to need another 24 hours. So you can't kasher a ben yoimoy of tarfus. If it got its bli of tarfus, and it's still less than 24 hours before the bliya got into the kli. Now, l'chatchilah, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, we're not supposed to kasher anything that's ben yoimoy. Even if you have a large kli, for instance, I once had a shaila, the cook, whatever it is, it slipped into the wrong place, his two or three main pieces of equipment that he uses during the cooking and during the dispensing of the thing. If he came to Eif, something happened to it, whatever it was. Right? And he needed it tonight for the fleishig meal. It was fleishig kelim that it fell into something milchig. So what is he to do? So there you got an emergency. So I, rather than be poigim, I told him, in emergency, let's do the way you're supposed to do. We took a large kli, right, which these things have in it, 40, 50 gallons, the regular, the typical institutional sized pot, filled it with water, and the water naturally was more than shishim keneged the kelim. So we kasha the ben yoimai, because if it's more than shishim, so when the bliya goes out into the water, it becomes bottled to the water. So therefore, there's nothing wrong with kashering the ben yoimai. It's bottled, and it can't make the water safe. And therefore, the water is not going to, re-tarfen the kelim, because the water is all mutter, because the bliya that comes out into them is bottled. That's what I told him to do. And in those days, when I maybe was younger and had a little bit more energy, I called together the guys who were learning Yeridaya, and I told him, come on, tell me, what is it, Stodim? Yes, the kasha, not the kasha. And they first started out asking them, what should we do when we have such an emergency? So he had a chance to review everything. Okay? But I do that today too. Lamaisa, what happens if it's a logically, and you don't have the option of having shishim keneged the kli? Many times there's no such thing. Not many times, most of the time, there's no such thing as having shishim keneged the kli. Any fair-sized kli is large enough that you don't have a keli that's 60 times larger than the internal value. So there's only one thing to do, is to be poigim the bliyas that you want to kasher, and then once it's less than time of gan, so it's still not mutter, by the way. You're poigim from hein pismogen, you can't use the keli. You still got to kasher it. Why? Because a keli that's an einay ben yoimoy that's around for a month. So we say the bliyas are all pogim, right? The stuff that you absorb, flavors are all pogim. But you still can't use the kli, because Chazal asked us to use the kli, einay ben yoimoy, gzeir mishum ben yoimoy. And the same thing applies to a keli where the flavors became pogim. We can't use it. But the advantage that we have is that when we'll kasher it, and there'll be less than shishim in the water keneged the kli, so it wouldn't become usher because of the bliyas going into it, because those bliyas can't usher the water, right? So those bliyas are nice and tamal of gam. So we poigim the bliyas. So the Chazon Ish says, wait a second, we don't know if we could be poigim bliyas. There's no literature in Chazal or in the Shoinim or in the Asher. There's nothing that tells you a method for being poigim bliyas, that I could take something that's absorbed into a keli through the usual process of cooking, and that I could cook into that keli some bad-tasting substance and make the bliyas have a bad taste. We don't know if we could do it. We have no mention of it any place, and so we're not going to invent a new method to be poigim bliyas. But the Chazon Ish says, we do have an eitzah. What's the eitzah? He says the eitzah is to be the eitzah is not to be poigim any bliyas, but is to fill a pot with water, the kashering pot we fill with water, and we throw into the kashering pot something that's awful tasting. You know, regularly, anybody knows that around any kitchen you have these what do you call them? The caustic, right? Which is sodium hydroxide, caustic soda. Why? That's it's not only awful tasting; it'll burn a hole straight through you. And we have all that stuff. What are the detergents? The detergents are made mostly of triglycerides, and very foul tasting. as pogum as you could possibly get. So, put a cup of some detergent in the water. Not too much, which will make the water all boiling and soapy, because that Avishailov, that's still cold water. But put enough that it should be, look like water, but it will taste awful. And then kasha the other keli in it. So what will happen when you kasha the keli? All the blias will come out, and they won't aser that water inside the kli, because the water is nice and tam lefgam. The water is nice and tam lefgam, so the water can never become aser. Understand? The water is terrible, terrible tasting. The water will never become aser. So by kashering it in a manner which is good for kashering, but it's not good because this is ben yoimoy, and the blias that come out are very tasty, and if they're tasty, they'll aser the water, right? Oh, but this water is pogam dika water, so the blias that come out through the kashering won't aser anything, and therefore the water is kosher. But he says that's still not a complete kashering, because you should have pure water to kasher. So after that's done, so pour out the foul tasting water and put in some regular water and bring it to a boil for a minute, so you have a regular kashering with normal water. But you took most of the blias out of the wall and nothing came back in, because whatever came back in was pogam. Okay, so that's the Chazon Ish's method, and that's what we use industrially and privately. That's the method that we use to be poigim of ben yoimai.
So when you boil up the water and you put it in the poigim, before it comes to 10, it's already gone out. The poigim is already evaporated.
Today he was talking about putting bleach in.
No. Let me tell you something. There are certain cases where the thing is if you, for instance, we spoke before about caustic. Caustic, which is the sodium hydroxide, the lye, that the caustic leaves the water at 175 degrees Fahrenheit. That's why you can't even put it in, because there are workers in the room and they'll get that stuff in their lungs and it'll have an awful effect on it. You can't boil a solution of caustic, right? So it leaves the water and it won't be there when the water comes to a full boil. But there's plenty of other things that are poigim that aren't gases that leave the water at low temperatures. And like I said, the detergent. Put detergent in the water. And put bleach in the water. You put stuff in that's going to taste awful. That doesn't leave the water. The one that leaves the water, the significant one, the one that's used all the time in cleaning, the main ingredient in a CIP, in a regular cleaning in place, a cleaning process that's done in industry, is caustic soda. On the other hand, if you have what you call a heat exchanger, you know, a heat exchanger is where the water is boiled while it's in very thin tubes that runs through boiling water. So it's boiled immediately, right? And you have what you call a closed system. The caustic won't leave the water because it's closed. It has no place to go. Understand? And the people in the room will survive also, because the thing is not going to enter the air in the room. Let me tell you something. You're not going to learn the skill of kashering in one day. Okay? The amount of yediyas and the amount of skills that you need is l'chol apochus, equal to a 4-year college diploma. It is so much, so many different methods and different things. It takes there's hundreds of different ideas and applications and methods.
The big soup in the hotels that are attached. So to kosher it, he said he walked in with his own dress, and he said he was pouring bleach in. And he said taste the water. They were rising to taste the water. He said it was no bleach in it, because it evaporated before him. So this guy with his 4-year college degree of koshering was not koshering the...
Because he didn't have the degree. He just went in there. I want to tell you, is lots of things where people just go in and they say, I know how to do it, I've seen it. I once had, being menakir, a behem, means removing all the chalovim and all the chutei dam. Do you know how much practice that entails? It'll take you a year till you know each single gid and each single piece of chalav, and if you want to add the gid anasha to the list, it'll take you an awful amount of time. And it'll take you another year to learn how to do it well so that you don't chop up the meat and shred it in the process, but you leave the meat looking saleable, as it still could, you know, be sold to a customer in the butcher store. So you
just be chopping.
What?
Should just be chopping.
Right. Yeah, you could take the gid hanosh, and many chalovim are in the best cuts of the animal. The chalovim that we cut out are in the rib steak. It's just over the ribeye. You leave the chutei dam, the chutei chalov there, so you're great. You debone the rib section, and now you have what's called the ribeye, the most expensive cut in the kosher part of the behemoth. And it could be loaded with the chut lavan and the chut other chalev and dam. So you have to know what you're doing. Bekitzer, it takes ideas and skills.
Kirby, as a customer, we have to know what we're buying. How do we know what we should buy?
The Rav Amashe, you rely on the Rav Amashe, on his nemonas. That's all. I went once into, by the way, extremely, extremely relevant, very kosher, and they have to own it, and now his children, you know, he's retired, and his children run it, and they had good top-notch menachrim there, and, you know, over the period of time that I was learning Nikur for myself, because I felt that if I'm going to go anytime, just drop into a butcher store and check up to see if he's doing the right thing, I have to be so knowledgeable that I could take a glance at something and know whether it was done right or not. If I can't do that, then I have no business appearing in a butcher store and taking a look. So, Baruch Hashem, we have other people who could do that now, but there was a period of time when I was the only one in the OU. So I had to train. I trained myself, and I went here and I went there until I was satisfied that I was thoroughly knowledgeable. But the time and the effort that I put into it was enormous. Okay, and while I was there, it happened the day before, but the people told me they were livid when I walked in. I saw it, the mashkichim, the menachim, everybody. They just were shaking from at frustration, call it better than anger. What happened? The day before, a young man came in, and he was going to be mashkiach in a place of nikur. And he came there, and they offered like we always do, for nothing. The OU does that all the time, and in any reputable kashrus place, will train somebody for nothing so that he could know what he's doing, and later on he could become a mumche. But that's what we do all the time, give training as gratis. Because if you don't, then you won't have mumchim in the next generation. So that's what's done all the time. The OU has an offer, outstanding offer, for any Rebbe Shehechsher, any, you know, what they call a Hema Shehechsher, which means a single person who has nobody with him, nobody looking over his shoulder, nobody who knows what he's doing, and he himself, Bechvoido V'yatzmoy, decides what to do, and he visits the places and checks and tells them what to do. I mean, it's such a precarious situation that I shiver when I think of it. Where does this young man know? Where did he learn? So we have an offer to teach anyone the full skill. Come, we'll spend all the time with you, and we won't charge you a penny. So l'chala pochus, I mean, I'll tell you, it's for our own health. When you look at that thing, your heart stops beating, the way it's handled, so-called Hamish. And one guy took up the offer in all the years. And he was there twice and three times, and that was the end of it. It's too much. It's too difficult. You have to go over it with again and again and again. So I did just that. I put on the dirty clothing, you know, of a butcher's assistant, and it's covered with blood and stains from head to foot. And I went in and worked and endured the stress and the chazor until I was able to do it perfectly. So I came there, and they're standing and they're just shivering in this frustration. And what happened the day before? There was this young man who was going to be the top-notch mashgiach or poncho, or whatever the correct word is, and for a place, for a well-known meat place. He came in there and he asked them if he had made up an appointment. He said, they'll teach him Mikra. They said, of course, come, we're waiting to see you, we're looking forward to this. And he was there for 20 minutes, and then he said, thank you very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. It took him almost as much to say the thank you as the whole teaching that they gave him. But 20 minutes, he was satisfied, they knew everything. I'll tell you, I also started shaking. It's just enough to, you know, people don't have an idea what it means to train, to go. Right? They'll walk in and they'll want to help you out over there. And the main task, we can, too. All of a sudden, just like that. I know what has to be done. All you have to do is, you know, X, Y, and Z. And that's all.